Maybe I have loud legs. That could be. That sounds like something I'd have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Stargazing, a Stargate gazing podcast. I'm your host, Mary.
And I'm your other host, Kathy.
And each week we review an episode of Stargate alternating between SG-1 and Atlantis. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going okay.
You're more tortellini than person, according to your username today.
I just inhaled so much tortellini before we started recording because I was so hungry.
Delicious.
Yes, it was delicious. I even had some broccoli with it.
Excellent.
To add some vegetables.
Vegetables are good for us.
They are. Yeah, I'm doing okay. Same old, tired, works busy, you know.
Same. Not much new to report today.
Yeah. I have a question. If your mail carrier is delivering a package, do they leave it at your mailbox at the end of your driveway?
A package?
Any kind of package.
If it doesn't go in the mailbox, then no. They would normally put it at the front door, I think.
Mine has started just leaving it by my mailbox.
That's weird.
Yep.
I don't know how many packages we get that are delivered by USPS, though. I think most of them are delivered by UPS or Amazon, and they're not actually allowed to use the mailbox, so they're supposed to leave it at your house.
Yeah, no.
That seems weird and not ideal.
The postman used to walk it at least to my stairs, you know, and leave it there, but now he's just like, apparently he's decided, fuck it, and just leaves it by the mailbox where anyone could just wander by and take it because it's at the end of the driveway.
Not that they can't take it from your porch. Obviously, people do. But it's way easier to take it from a mailbox at the end of the driveway than... And also more noticeable there. That's annoying and stupid.
I actually even had a package today that I thought FedEx was delivering, but it was also at the mailbox. So the post office might have done the last portion of that delivery, too.
That's very weird. Yeah. Now, the only packages that we have had delivered in the area of our mailbox have been the ones that could fit in the mailbox.
Yeah. I don't expect people to walk all the way up all of the 10 million stairs in front of my house.
Yeah. Your house is elevated on a hill.
Yeah.
But that's still obnoxious to not at least drop it at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah.
Or like by the garage. Like when I delivered for Amazon, I would sometimes deliver by the garage door.
Yeah. I'm totally happy with by the garage door.
And that's not laziness. That is because I'd already taken like 15,000 steps and was exhausted and couldn't handle another flight of stairs.
I wasn't even considering you were lazy.
I know. Yeah, well, some people would complain that we were being lazy if we didn't bring it all the way up to their front door. But the reason for that is because the drivers get tired. And if you're late in the day, stop, and then we've already been up and down a whole shit ton of stairs and taken a million steps, we're probably going to be dropping it at your garage instead. But yeah, that is weird. I wouldn't ever leave it at someone's, just at their mailbox. With the exception of when there was a gate at the driveway and I couldn't get into the property any further than that. And even then, I think I dropped it on the other side of the gate. Although for Amazon, they actually have to be within a certain radius of your house. So if they can't actually get to your house, they can't leave it.
Interesting.
Because the delivery tracking software won't actually let you register the package as having been delivered unless you're within a certain number of feet of the house. So you can't actually drop it at the end of the driveway for a lot of houses. Yeah. That's my fun story. Normally it was fine, but it was really annoying some days when there was a gate and I couldn't actually get to the house. And there was no one there to open the gate, and so I'd have to take it back with me, and then you get in trouble for taking packages back. But you can't leave it either, so it's like a no-win situation.
Yeah. That's the most exciting thing going on in my life.
Thrilling. Yeah. I have no interesting stories this week.
You know who else doesn't have an interesting story this week?
Probably good. Stargate SG-1?
Yep.
I did think it got at least a little more interesting than when I shut it off last week when I finally got around to finishing it this morning.
Yeah, I was just channeling my inner Mary for that intro, segue, is the word.
I appreciate it because, like I said, I did think it got better, but I still wouldn't say it's a great episode.
Indeed.
Spoiler. What episode is that we are talking about that was not great and kind of boring?
Stargate SG-1 Season 8, Episode 5, icon. Yay. Woo. We're in some random place. A bedroom. A random bedroom.
Yes.
We don't know where. There's a woman there and a man in the bed. The woman is tending to the man and saying, it's time. And we don't see who the man is initially because his entire head is wrapped in bandages. She unwraps it. And oh my God, it's Daniel.
Peekaboo.
What? I don't know why his whole head was covered.
Yeah, we never really find out. Yeah. Even when we learn the backstory of his injuries, they don't really elaborate on that.
He's a little scabby looking and has a little bit trouble seeing when he first, you know, has the bandages taken off, which makes sense. Getting used to the light again. She says to him, it's nice to finally see your eyes and welcome back. Her name is Lita.
Hi, Ron.
Hello, Lita.
Which Daniel already knows, and every time her name is said in this episode, I think about Project Lita from Orphan Black.
I just think about Lita from Stargate.
Oh!
Deep Space Nine. From Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
That's true.
Lita, 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 yep. Lita.
They're in some sort of safe house, or her uncle's house, where they are safe, far away from the city. Daniel is having a hard time remembering what's going on, though he does remember a city and something terrible happening where many people died. Daniel asks her, it's our fault. None of this would have happened, right? If we hadn't come here, right, right, right?
Of course.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm just going to deflect and be like, I'm happy you're alive. It's a miracle. And that's the end of the, not the episode.
Check, please.
Just, that's credits. Then we're at credits.
Yep. Yep.
I'm fine.
If only it was the end of the episode. Then, it's 3 months ago, according to the screen. There's some guy giving a tour to a bunch of tourists, as a tour guide typically does. He's talking about the Great Ring of Avedon, and a lot of them have these circle necklaces that they're wearing, and it's clearly not Earth, but it looks Earth adjacent. Maybe like, what, 200 years-ish ago, would you say?
Sure. Yeah.
Kind of. A bit ambiguous. Somewhere between like 100 and 200 years ago. They have some technology that's similar, but then like the way that that lady's house was designed reminded me of just like some 1700s farmhouse.
Yeah. It was
they have a weird mix of aesthetics.
Yeah.
The tour guide goes on with his touring, talking about basically just the planet's beliefs of what the gate means and that they don't know exactly what it is. And maybe it has to do with honoring gods by ancient worshippers. And then all of a sudden, the gate turns on. The chevrons start to engage. And then, of course, the wormhole appears with a big sploosh. Thankfully, nobody was standing close enough to it to become feet shoes. So everybody was fine. And a melp comes through. Everybody is incredulous and rather scared, although nobody runs away screaming like I probably would have if I was in their
shoes.
Right?
What the hell is that?
Yep. And then it just kind of morphs into the next scene, which is SG-1, the current SG-1 of all of three people, Sam, Daniel, and Teal, coming through the event horizon and being meted by some sort of delegation. There's a guy named Commander Gareth, and he is there to represent the people of the Rand Protectorate. They apologize for scaring the tourists and say that it's the first time they've made first contact with a planet in the middle of a museum. Gareth says, yes, it was rather surprising.
That belongs in a museum!
Some other guy is there named Kane, and he looks at them skeptically and also talks about the fact that it is surprising that they are human. Sam says that they have a good reason for that, but she'll explain that eventually. And they're also going to tell them everything that they know about the Stargate.
Ooh.
Daniel points out the necklaces that the people in this scene are also wearing with the big rings on them and says that he notices the Great Ring is a recurring motif in their culture. And they say that certain traditions that predate their age of enlightenment are adherents of this culture and that they wear them more as a fashion symbol than a religious belief nowadays. But Cain says that their history tells of an age when powerful gods ruled the world and the ring was supposedly a power source for them of some sort.
Hmm.
Gareth is like, yeah, well, those were just legends.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Cain is establishing himself as a bit more of a believer, while Gareth is definitely more of a skeptic.
Yep. Cain is played by a guy who is another Battlestar Galactica actor. He's one of the Cylons. Spoiler, if you haven't seen that 20-year-old show.
I haven't, but I still know. Well, I mean, I've seen parts of it, but I still know what a Cylon is, even though I haven't seen
all of it. I guess it wasn't the Cylon part, but if you watch it, you might be like, oh, you spoiled that guy's a Cylon. Come on. Anyway.
I will not remember what that guy looked like well enough for that to be a spoiler if and when I finally get around to watching it like I plan to do someday.
And then I was looking at his IMDb really quick, and I was like, oh, yeah, he was an Orphan Black as well, which ties in nicely to my thinking about that through this entire episode. Good show. If anyone hasn't seen it, do recommend.
Very good show. Never finished it. I should go back and finish that. Yeah. We started rewatching it and got further along, but never actually finished it on our second rewatch.
Things happen.
Star Trek happens and gets in the way, and other TV shows.
And life, I guess.
Oh, I guess there's that. That's boring and stupid, though.
Yes, God.
I'm going to stop doing the responsible parts of that and just stick with TV.
Yes, that sounds like a great plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah. Fabulous. Yeah.
Then we're back in Lita's old-timey house of old-timiness. There we go. She is wiping Daniel's face with a wet cloth. Nobody else would know this, but the lamp that was in the background reminded me of the lamps we had in my living room when I was growing up.
I love lamp. Do you really love the lamp, or are you just saying it because you saw it?
I love lamp. I love lamp.
But now I want to go back and watch it again and look for that and see if I can remember what the lamps in your living room looked like based on that. I was in your house so many times, but much of your house as I can picture in my head can't picture specifically what the lamp looks
shocking.
Like.
She didn't mean to wake him, even though she's rubbing his face with a wet cloth.
Yeah, how is that not going to wake a person unless they're very unconscious?
Don't know. She gives him some little bit of medicine that's for pain. She can't give him a lot, though, because their medicine's in short supply, indicating, again, that there's issues going on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's arm is also in a sling, I noticed in this scene as well, so he has other injuries besides his scabby face.
Gross scabby face.
Yep.
Yeah, you left out a word there.
That was about it for that scene. She's like, I'm gonna go, and he's like, no, stay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. Yeah, it was
thrilling.
Great. Yeah.
No, it kind of was, though. Well, he was so quiet that I had to turn on closed captions because as much as he mumbles, you know, he already mumbles to begin with, but this was when I was running on the treadmill the first time. I also finished it on the treadmill this morning, but so I had to turn on closed captions, but the DVD wasn't displaying them properly, so I had to go onto Amazon Prime, and Amazon Prime launched the wrong episode, made me watch two
assholes.
Commercials. And then I backed out immediately because I realized it had launched the wrong episode. And then I went into the right episode and it made me watch two more commercials again. And then I fast forwarded to get to the point where I had left off in the DVD. And after like another minute, it made me watch two more commercials.
Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really angry making. I am not going to boycott Amazon Prime because I use it for everything as much as I have tried in the past not to, but probably not going to use Prime Video so much.
Does
anymore.
It all have ads now, or is it just some stuff? Or
I think it's all of it.
Oh, interesting.
To my knowledge. I don't know. That was the only show I've tried to watch on it so far since they changed
Fair.
That policy.
Fair. We're headed into another flashback, this one from 2 months prior. SG-1 is on Earth this time in the SGC, having a sit down with Jack in the conference room, briefing room. Jackass. Yes, that's a new character. Jass.
Yeah.
General Jass. O'Beal. There we go.
Yep. I like
it. It's fine. Jack is asking how things went with some people called the Caledonians, who are presumably other people on the planet besides the Rand Protectorate, because Daniel also references them in the same response. Daniel was not able to meet with them for very long because the Rand people wouldn't let him. There were national security concerns, Gareth, the leader, told Daniel. Mainly, Daniel says that they would tell the Kalimdorians too much about the Stargate. Sounds like Earth.
Indeed.
Yeah. Daniel gives a little background that these two warring factions, nations, whatever, aren't actively warring. They're doing the Cold War thing. Again, similar to Earth. They could kill each other, but they don't because, you know, they'd all die.
Indeed.
And Sam even says, sounds depressingly familiar.
Yes.
Thrown in with this, Daniel adds that there is a third thing to consider, and that is that there is a group of religious fundamentalists.
Great.
Yeah. Always good to throw that into the mix.
Yeah.
Yep. They were people who definitely believed the previously referred to myth about the planet being created by gods and the Stargate being their source of power. And someday these gods were going to return and reward them. Now that the Stargate has activated, sort of, you know, lends a little credence to their beliefs. Before the Stargate activated, these folks were considered kind of on the fringe, a little kooky maybe, a little too hardcore. But now that the Stargate's a thing, rumors are flying. People are like, huh, maybe these guys had the right idea. Maybe they do know what's up.
Great.
Let's join them.
Rumor has it she ain't got your love anymore.
Rumor has it.
And then Jack is like, that's terrible and not our problem. But Jack, it's definitely your problem.
Yeah, it really is. And of course, out in the hall, after Jack has left, Daniel catches up with him to say so. And to try to convince Jack to let him go back so that he can try to negotiate, talk everybody down, convince them that the gate has nothing to do with gods, all of the usual stuff. Of course, Jack does agree because now Jack is Hammond and Daniel is Jack in this new paradigm. So he does say that Daniel can go, but he's got to maintain regular contact, no exceptions, and he's got to come back to Earth as soon as things start to get a little squirrely. So Daniel runs off. Meanwhile, Jack keeps yelling squirrely at him down the hall. And then we're in Leta's house again. Daniel is standing, doing something, and she tells him he shouldn't be standing. And Daniel's like, don't worry, I do feel terrible. Great. He's still trying to remember exactly what happened and is asking her for more information. He says that he remembers being in a bunker with Commander Gareth, and then there was some sort of an attack, and then that is the last that he can remember. Leta mentions Jared, who is the same guy, Kane, that I mentioned before, Jared Kane, and she says that he's away searching for survivors, but he'll be back in a few days and would know better than she would what exactly happened to Daniel. So Daniel's going to have to wait until Kane comes back. We learn here that she is Kane's wife and also that that guy was the chief aide to Commander Gareth, who was the guy that first met Sam when she came through the gate. So I guess he's not in that role anymore. He moved her out to the countryside in this old-timey farmhouse, wherever the hell this actually is, because he thought that she would be safer there, but he's still doing stuff in the capital. Daniel's like, all right, cool. Well, I don't want to hang around for your husband or anyone else to get back. I kind of want to get back to Earth. And Leta says, yeah, well, about that, you're not going to actually be able to reach the gate because there's a whole bunch of rebel patrols around it, and it would be super dangerous, and also you are not well enough to go and travel to the gate, so Daniel is stuck there. And then he asks what happened to Commander Gareth.
And then we don't go immediately into a flashback, but instead we are at the SGC again, with SG 2/3 and Jack.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
Sam and Teal'c are returning from the planet that Daniel is currently on. Jack is like, I'd like some good news, Colonel. And she is like, sorry, no.
Good news, everyone.
She and Teal'c met with the leader of the rebels, which was Soren. So apparently this religious zealot has become a rebel.
Yeah.
But the meeting was not helpful. They were given an audience with him of 15 minutes after he made them wait several hours to see them. And he would not allow them to look for Daniel Jackson. And I say his full name because Teal'c said it.
Of course.
Sam says that Soren has united all fundamentalist factions in the Rand Protectorate, which was the side with the Stargate, which means he's in power now. He also told them they had to leave after their 15 minutes with him. And he said he'd look into things for them.
How kind of him.
Yeah, yeah. And he won't even let them send out a UAV or do anything to find Daniel. So they are kind of stuck right now with what to do.
Then it is 6 weeks ago and we are in a bunker. Daniel and Kane are there wandering around. There's a blue something somewhere that Daniel saw, and he asks what the color blue specifically signifies, and that's their military alert. And in this country, blue is the highest level of alert, so things aren't looking so good here. There's been all kinds of civil unrest in various cities across the country, generally for reasons of, as Kane calls them, religious madmen reclaiming the cities, the attempts to reclaim the cities from the hands of religious madmen. Then there's also some other problems as well, which is why it is at code blue now. It's not just the unrest in the cities that's causing it, but they're also having to heighten their alert status with the Caledonians, who they've had their strained relationship with for who knows how long.
It's a beige alert.
If I don't survive, tell my wife hello.
Gareth is there talking to somebody in a radio or whatever and promises that they're going to share this technology once they fully understand it. So presumably they're talking about the gate or some sort of gate-related technology. Someone there named Traden, I guess, is who he's talking to on the radio. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. And they're talking about the gate and they want the scientists to access it. But of course, Gareth doesn't want to give them access to it because this guy Traden is one of the Caledonians. So no access for them. Sucks to be them. If the ring had been activated on Caledonian soil, they would have also kept it all to themselves, Gareth tries to argue. Caledonia is under strict martial law because of news of the Offworlders. So that's fun.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, their domestic security remains intact, Traden assures him. So, good? Gareth says that the citizens of this world are not children, and he thinks that Traden is being harsh with their martial law, which probably, yes, that is generally the result of martial law, is excessive strictness. But Traden is concerned about what's going on with Soren and his followers and the fact that they're losing control of more and more cities to the religious fundamentalists that are causing all this upheaval because of the gate activation. The scene ends with Traden saying that if the entire Rand Protectorate falls into Soren's hands, they'll consider it an act of war.
Neat.
Yeah, that's great.
Back at the farmstead, Daniel is trying to call Stargate Command from some radio that Lita had. Just a general call to Stargate Command. Please come in. I don't know how long it's been since he's been unbandaged, but his face is all clear now and his arm seems healed.
Yeah, so it must have been at least, if his arm is better, probably at least a month.
Or yeah.
More, probably more. And apparently he was already there for, what, like 3 months? Because say the flashback, the first flashback was 3 months before the unbandaging?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Although I guess he hasn't actually been stuck there that long.
No, back and forth,
that last scene was 6 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah. Lita comes in and asks if he's heard anything, but no luck yet. Daniel says that something seems to be jamming all the signals he's picking up. Whatever's going on, he knows there's signals happening, but he can't, like, get a clear signal.
Is it Lone Star? Is he giving him the raspberry?
It might be giving him the raspberry.
I've lost the bleeps, I've lost the sweeps, and I've lost the creeps.
The what?
The what?
And the what?
So that's basically it. Daniel's trying to radio to SGC. It's obviously got to happen while the Stargate is open and also through whatever signal jamming is happening. Raspberry. Lita's like, well, let's take a walk then. So they go to take a walk. They're having a little chat about Soren and also the history. Not even the history. I don't know if he goes into the specifics of who the Goa'uld are and what they've done.
Yeah, not really. No.
But she's like, how do you know Soren's not right? And he's like, because I totally know, dude. Don't worry about it.
He just mentions a little bit about bad guys being the ones that use it.
Parasitical alien race stealing advanced technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's as far as he goes into
penchant for melodrama. And if Soren ever met one, he would change his tune.
Indeed.
Lita's like, oh, you still think this is all your fault, huh? Don't worry about it. It's totally not your fault. You didn't know it was going to happen. You didn't cause the issues on our world. You chose to stay when the fighting started. they caused some issues, obviously.
Yeah.
Fanned the flames unintentionally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's like, no, no, Daniel, it's not you. I promise it's not you. We've been nearly at war with Caledonia forever, and it was just a matter of time before things went sideways. She says, since you've come, I've begun to think we may have a chance to undo it and rebuild. And I'm like, is Daniel God?
Why?
Like, yeah. Is he Jesus? Like, what?
Yeah, what has given her that indication about his visit?
Don't know.
Are you a god?
That's weird.
It is.
Maybe
quite,
it's.
I agree.
Maybe she meant like a general you, like because of the Stargate somehow. I don't know, but.
Yeah, maybe. Like, yeah, like the, all of the Earth people in general?
Maybe.
Coming? Not just Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel's not so impressive. Back in the control room, Poulter is trying to contact Daniel. There are some voices coming through whatever radio they are using, and Sam asks him to boost the signal. They are at maximum gain. There's some garbled voices. Jack comes in to check in on what's going on with Sam and Poulter here, but they really just are not getting anything on him yet.
Should we go maximum gain?
Absolutely not. Let's not do that. Even minimal gain often doesn't work out so well. Jack asks if they've had any word from SG9 yet. They've just reported in, but whatever negotiations they've been working on are not going anywhere, and Soren is continuing to refuse to allow any teams to look for Daniel. So they're at an impasse. There's been absolutely no progress. So Jack thinks maybe he needs to meet those people himself. In Lita's weird farmhouse, Kane is there, as well as some other soldiers. So there's actually a bunch of people there. They're talking about what's going on in the capital. They're talking about Soren and his troops that are pretty much running things now and doing sweeps, looking for survivors and anybody that they find that they think is still loyal to the old government is executed immediately. So that's bad.
Yeah.
Daniel says, well, it's probably just about continuing the chaos rather than actually trying to come to any sort of a peaceful conclusion. Kane agrees with Daniel on that one. And says that all of the people that are still there are too afraid to fight back. So Soren's just got free run of the place with his loyalists that are there with him. And Daniel, yet again, asks what happened. But this time the right person is there. And Kane is that person. So we get a flashback.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel enters the bunker and is immediately stopped by guards. And Kane's like, you have to leave. But Daniel's like, what's going on? I'm not going to pay attention to what you just told me. Daniel's like, I heard the Stargate moved. And Kane says that they had to move it because of the rebels seizing Rand's cities. And they moved it into the bunker to keep it safe. Daniel asks what's up with the Caledonians. Kane says that their missiles are ready and aimed at the Rand Protectorate. So maybe you need to go home now, Daniel. We also see in the room that Gareth is there again, and he is back on the horn with Trident, who is extremely concerned about what's going on with the fundamentalists taking control of their country.
Rightfully so. Rightfully so.
Yeah. Gareth is like, don't worry about it. We're totally gonna reclaim our cities. And Trident's like, shut up, man. We know that's not gonna happen. You've basically got a civil war on your hands. And FYI, if any of the rebels take over your weapon systems, we're gonna consider ourselves unsafe, and therefore we will be attacking you. They have more back and forth about the Rand Protectorate not showing the Caledonians the Stargate. But unfortunately, in this moment of bickering, they get a report that the rebels have exploded a device near one of their missile silos, and they've taken it over, which is bad.
Yeah, conveniently happened right after they were just talking about the eventuality of such a thing.
And information travels quickly on this planet. Apparently. Trident has already heard about this.
Yeah, I was wondering how they found out about that so fast.
I don't know. Gareth is like, don't worry, we're going to take care of it. And Trident's like, it is too late. We are going to start firing at your missile sites. And if you don't want a war, don't retaliate. And then the Caledonians launch a bunch of missiles.
Yep.
Neat.
Indeed. Back in present day, Kane continues his story and says that the destruction could have potentially been contained if Soren's forces hadn't been controlling one of the missile sites, as we just found out that they were. And Soren launched a counterattack on Caledonia, so just escalated the entire situation because, of course, Caledonia took that as war, just as they said that they would if there was any kind of retaliation. So now a whole shit ton of cities have been completely destroyed. And as Keen says, only a fraction of the population has survived, so that's great.
War. War never changes.
Eek. Yeah. And they're mostly in just various outlying areas, not anywhere around major cities or anything like that anymore. And the Caledonians aren't doing so great either, but it sounds like they might be at least a little bit better off. Actually, I guess they're not really better off because Kane does mention that their missile systems were more accurate than the Caledonians. So both sides are fucked, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Daniel still is like, great, but what the fuck happened to me? What happened to me? I don't care about all of the destruction that's happened all over your planet. I want to know what happened to me. So we get another flashback. This flashback is pretty much right where we left off in the previous one, with the missiles heading towards the various facilities from Caledonia. And then we find out that Soren's forces are moving in on this bunker facility where they are. So Kane wants to try to help Daniel get to the Stargate and get off the planet.
I thought that was pretty nice of Kane.
It was.
Given the situation.
Yeah, it was. To be concerned for Daniel's safety and to be offering to escort him there, even though, you know, everything is messed up and really he should be fleeing. But yeah, good for him and for not doing that. Unfortunately, though, before they can actually get Daniel to the gate, the rebel forces do start to overcome the bunker and there's a whole big firefight. And Kane gets shot in the leg. It looks pretty gruesome. Daniel covers him and helps to get him up and out of the bunker. Kane directs him on where to go. They manage to make it all the way outside, but then there is a giant explosion and Daniel gets thrown to the ground, as does Kane, who was actually kind of already half on the ground anyway, since he can't walk currently. And that, presumably, is what happened to Daniel and why his face was all mangled and his arm was busted up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in present day, Kane goes on to say that loyalist soldiers found them first and managed to get them out of the city. So good thing that it wasn't Soren's people that found them first. Otherwise, they'd be dead already. Daniel's wounds were a lot worse than Kane's were, even though Kane was gruesomely shot in the leg. So,
yeah.
Okay. Mm. So, yeah. So that's why Daniel is there at this place to try to keep him safe while he gets nursed back to health. Daniel asks what happened to Commander Gareth, and Commander Gareth was executed after the bunker fell. And now that Soren is in power, he's got his own provisional government going on. They don't really know exactly what is going on back down in the bunker complex itself, but what they do know is that Soren has control of the Stargate, so Daniel is not going anywhere anytime soon.
Sucks to be Daniel.
Right?
In the SGC, instead of going off-world to deal with this, Jack is receiving visitors. It's Soren and a couple of his, I don't know, guards or buddies or aides, whatever. Soren and company have come to Earth. SG 2/3 and Jack are there to meet them and welcome him. Soren lets them know they've renamed their country. It's now Avedon because it speaks more to his people's beliefs. Teal'c recognizes it as ancient Gwa'uld, meaning the gods are just.
He seems rather alarmed by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he doesn't say anything. We know Teal'c's expression. His expressionless expression.
Indeed.
Yeah. Soren seems pretty happy that Teal'c knows what it means, though.
Yes.
Not happy.
He
does.
That's
not the right word, but...
Well, he seems to appreciate it and to think that Teal'c might be on his side. It was kind of like the look he was giving Teal'c. He was, like, impressed and... almost flattered looking when we all know that Teal'c didn't mean it as a good thing.
No. He should give Soren one of his motivational posters.
He should. Absolutely. Available on our merch store.
Yes.
bit.ly/stargatesing.
Yeah. Back in the old-timey farmhouse, Daniel and Kane are still talking about the situation. Daniel thinks that they should try to retake the bunker from Soren.
Great.
Which would have... Yeah. Daniel thinks. Because Daniel wants to go home.
Yeah.
It's all about Daniel.
What forces they're supposed to use since they have so few people left and those few people that they have are all in pretty bad shape. Who knows? But yeah. Let's go with what Daniel thinks.
Daniel's arms were looking pretty muscular in this scene. And
didn't notice.
Yeah, and so maybe he thought he could do it with his guns.
With his gun show. Yeah.
I was actually thinking too, in my head, I've decided that Christopher Judge and Michael Shanks are having some sort of gun off. Because they've both been showing their arms a lot more, I feel like, in this season. And
I did notice that Teal'c had. Yeah. I hadn't noticed that Daniel has.
It's mostly Teal'c, but yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a bit more with Daniel, too. So in my head, they're having a friendly, like, competition about it. Anyway.
Yeah. Fair. I like it. Yeah.
Kane's like, we've got a dozen people in a heavily fortified bunker. That is suicide. And Daniel's like, but maybe we could coordinate with my friends on Earth who I've been totally incapable of getting in touch with thus far, but somehow I'm going to do it. And maybe with their help, we could totally do this. But Kane's like, yeah, but you haven't been able to get in touch with them, so we can't do this. Daniel's like, it's not about bringing me home, it's about helping your people with my people.
And also about bringing him home, mostly about bringing him home.
Kane says, too much has happened to fix with one heroic action, which, yes.
Yes.
He's full defeat. He's like, Soren won. It's over.
Kind of don't blame him, though.
No. I mean, losing most of your population in a matter of how long? I don't know. Not very long at all.
Yeah. It's not like it was just a matter of Soren taking over the city. It was a matter of Soren taking over the city and all of their cities being destroyed.
Yeah.
And I guess now the one city that is left is this one that is ruled by Soren, and they have hardly any people left to fight him.
Yeah. I would hide out on the old-timey farmhouse, too.
Same. In the briefing room, Soren and Jack are there having a little chat. Soren thinks that the people of Earth revere the Great Ring as much as they do, and so he appreciates them a bit more than maybe the other people on his planet who he just slaughtered all of. And Jack's like, yeah, we love the old gal, but likely for very different reasons than you do. And Soren's like, oh, I don't know, we both want to defend our ways of life and protect our people and want good things for our people. Teal'c, though, says that Soren doesn't represent the people of his world and he just kills the people that don't believe the same thing that he does, so that's not very great. But Soren says that he admires Teal'c for speaking his mind. How kind of him.
Yeah.
Jack's like, yeah, well, he's actually holding back. Sam chimes in to say that they're going to offer them aid and supplies, mostly just humanitarian aid, not like military aid, in exchange for help locating Daniel. They'll give them food and medicine and that kind of stuff. They will also give at least some personnel to help stabilize the situation. So it doesn't really sound like they're going to try to fight for Soren, but they're going to try to at least help bring peace. Soren, though, at least pretends to not think Daniel is still alive. Whether or not he actually does, we don't know.
Yeah.
But, of course, SG-1 and Jack all believe that he's still alive. Soren, though, declines their offer, but they are particularly interested in any weapons technology.
Shocking.
Yeah, of course. Tilk's like, yeah, but your people are starving and dying of disease, so what about those things? And Soren's like, yeah, well, it sucks to be them, but maybe weapons? How about weapons? They'll begin all over again once we've finished purging all of the evil people that are against us from existence. Then everything will be fine and there will be peace once we've murdered all the rest of the people that are dissenting against us. Obviously, the Earth people are not too keen on that idea. Jack says that that is somewhat of a crime against humanity.
Planets have a sovereign claim to inalienable human rights.
Inalien. If you could only hear yourselves. Human rights. Why, the very name is racist.
Sam asks what they would need weapons for if all they care about is spiritual salvation, and Soren reiterates, well, the revolution's not complete. They've got to kill everybody, and that doesn't just mean the people of his own country that don't agree with him, but it also means all of Caledonia.
Back on the planet, Lita is doing some laundry and Daniel goes to her to ask that she talk to Kane about Daniel's plan. He's like, we can totally regain control and everything and you need to convince him of that. And she's like, no, I actually kind of think he's right. Everything's looking pretty bleak for us. If we lived through what happened with Soren, but you were probably going to die soon anyway because of disease or yet another purge by Soren.
Quite the optimist here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know I said I would give up and live on this farm, but like I would enjoy living on this farm and not having to go to work anymore and presumably having like dogs and maybe some friends and family around me.
Right. But not this.
But nope, she's convinced that the end is here and they're just waiting to die.
But Daniel's like, don't give up hope. My people are totally going to help, even though, again, I haven't been able to get in touch with them. And then she's like, what if you overthrow Soren? You're just going to leave me?
Yeah, that was a weird take, given that she is married to someone else.
Yeah, well then, you know, she says again, you know, he changed. He's remote and distant. So, you know, it's totally fine if you want to, like, maybe go hide in the shed and do something.
Yeah.
That's totally what she said.
I mean, it was kind of the implication, though.
In conclusion, somehow she decides she's going to try to talk to Kane about this again on Daniel's behalf. And that's it. I don't know. I didn't really buy this, like, feelings for each other thing, but I think it's because we didn't spend enough time with them, so there wasn't any relationship really built. And there clearly was, because time passed, right?
Yeah.
But we don't see it.
Yeah, they've been together a lot, but yeah, I agree. It just seemed a little forced.
Yeah. Like, oh, Daniel's on a planet alone with a woman? Obviously she's in love with him.
Yeah, but also the circumstances of it. Like, it's wartime, she is married to somebody else, and he's been really sick, and she's been taking care of him. And, like, I know there's, like, you know, the whole Florence Nightingale syndrome, but it just seemed a little bit weird to me, the whole setup.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anyway, we're in Jack's office next. Sam and Jack are debating. Not so much debating, I guess, but kind of recapping what just happened, and Jack is talking about how it was all just a big waste of time.
Let's not bicker and argue about who killed who.
But Sam says that he's still there and hasn't actually left to go back to his planet yet, so she thinks that that means that he's still willing to deal with them, even though they haven't actually made any progress yet. Tilk is there too, and says that since Soren doesn't really need any humanitarian aid, there isn't really a whole lot that they can do to help him. other than essentially making things worse by helping him strengthen his position, because the country is already in chaos and that strengthens him. So like, there's not really any negotiation that they can do that's not kind of just going to make things worse. Sam doesn't want to give up, obviously, and Jack agrees that they can't just give up, but doesn't really know what else they should be doing now either. They're going to continue to monitor the radio in case Daniel manages to get a hold of one and try to contact them, or hopefully maybe try to continue to signal out to him and have him answer or something. So, yep, that's the plan. They're going to try to do something with radios. Hello, hello, is there anybody in there? Just not if you can hear me.
Is there anyone home? Something.
Yeah, they're monitoring countless radio signals.
Kane and Lita have a discussion about Daniel's proposal. Kane is like, it's crazy. She's like, but maybe we could do it. And he's like, you just want me to die and all of my men to die so Daniel can go home? She's like, no, no, it's about us. It's totally about us. It's not about Daniel at all. His friends are going to help us. It's going to be great. Kane's like, I totally know that you and Daniel are having a thing. And she's like, no, no, of course not.
I would think that he would want to try harder to get rid of Daniel if he suspected that were the case.
Maybe, but if you had to die in the process.
Yeah, I was going to say, although I guess not when the stakes would be his life possibly being lost in the process. So never mind.
Yeah. He's like, I regret the past and I would do things differently if I could. And do you love him? And she's like, I trust him. Which apparently is going to be good enough for him. Whatever.
Yeah.
Back at the SGC, Soren is meeting with Jack and Tilk again. He is telling them about his grand scheme. Once he's established order, Avedon will be different than before. People will live simply and humbly, waiting for their god's inevitable return. And Jack's like, these gods suck, man. Trust me, you do not want to meet them. Tilk says they will reward your worship with enslavement. And Soren's like, please. Our faith is unshakable, so too bad. And Tilk is like, this is about power, not faith. Ha! I know your game.
Ha!
Ha!
Ha. Then we're in the gate room. The wormhole is open. Soren comes in with all of his people and they're escorted by some guards. Jack and Tilk are there as well.
Tight t-shirt on Tilk. Not only indeed were his guns out, you nope could see those pecs right through the shirt.
The pecs were out too.
Yep.
Yep. Sam calls Jack up to the control room where she is hanging out for all of this and says that they've been implementing new spread spectrum frequency hopping into their communications software. And I guess that allowed them to get in touch with Daniel.
Sure. That sounds like a totally thing happening.
Yeah, because then Daniel is there. Not there, but, you know, on the radio.
Oh, I guess it is a thing. Sorry.
Is it really?
Just looking. There's a frequency hopping spread spectrum Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means. A method of transmitting radio signals by rapidly changing the carrier frequency among many frequencies occupying a large spectral band. That's
interesting.
Sure.
So I guess that they had countless radio frequencies to monitor and
all right,
that helped them find the right one with Daniel on it. How Daniel got a radio, I don't know. But apparently Daniel's got a radio, so that's great.
Yeah.
He's glad to hear their voices. Jack asks, are you coming home? And Daniel says, as soon as he finds his Kel'Tesh, then yeah. But it looks a lot like his Rin Kel Nok. Have they seen that? And he just keeps saying a bunch of things that have a bunch of Gua'uld terms mixed in. Tilk realizes exactly what Daniel is doing, which is sending them a secret message in Gua'uld, which even though Soren apparently can speak at least some Gua'uld, I guess he doesn't know these words. Why Daniel didn't choose some language that's really only found on Earth and not one that we know that Soren knows at least a little of, I don't know, but here we are.
Maybe none of them know any other language.
I mean, I guess that's possible, but they would at least recognize that it's not English and have, I don't know. I thought that it was weird that they would be using Guo'uld, knowing that Soren knows at least a little of it.
That's fair. Yeah. Reasonable. Does Daniel know that, though?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. He might not. So anyway, Daniel is talking about how he wants someone to go to his house and feed his Loa sack, if they haven't already, while he's been away. Long story short, though, in the briefing room, we find out that these random Guo'uld words that Daniel gave them is, at least according to Tilk's translation, coordinated attack, but it's also giving them information about not just the attack plan, but the best time to go and all kinds of information that he didn't want to give in English, I guess, in case someone was monitoring the line other than SG-1 and Jack.
Right.
So they're going to go through the gate at the same time that Daniel and Kane's men are going to enter the bunker facility from the surface. They're going to take SG-3, 6, and 12 as backup, and they're going to try to secure the gate and extract Daniel in this process. Tilk says that Daniel has also given them an estimated strength of Soren's forces. How they got that from the bunker that they don't have access to, I don't know, but apparently they did.
Maybe Daniel said a lot more, like, off screen. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, last we knew, they didn't know anything that was going on in the bunker other than that the gate was still in there.
True. That is true.
Anyway, they also figured out that their next communication's going to be in 5 hours. And then at that time, they'll confirm everything and then just wait for a go from Jack. I was kind of surprised that Jack actually took the time to ask Tilk if he was absolutely sure he got everything right. Because of course Tilk is sure he got everything right.
Yeah.
He's been speaking Guo'uld like his whole life. So.
It's true.
Yeah. Like I said, I did think it was a little strange that he was kind of second guessing Tilk. But with that confirmation, he tells them they have the go ahead.
Yep. And back on the planet, Kane and Daniel are strategizing. Daniel's reporting the SGC is going to send 15 people. Kate is like, really? That's it?
Yeah, that doesn't.
But Daniel's
seem
like
a
no,
lot.
They're the best. It's fine. It's not a lot. Yeah. No. And he says they're trained for missions exactly like this. Okay. Did you just send me a kiss?
I might have. I meant to send that to Jeff.
I assume so.
Hee hee. But you can have one too.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Can you feel the love tonight? Daniel's like, it's gonna be fine, we can do this, and we need to respond to our people now to let them know we're a go. Unfortunately, before anything else happens, Lita comes in to report that there is a patrol coming. So everybody's gotta go hide in the cellar while Lita deals with the people coming to her house. Soren's people come to the door. In the name of Soren, they demand that Lita open the door.
There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door.
They are there for an inspection. He tells her to stand aside, and I was like, she's already doing that.
Yes.
That's weird. So they come in and have a look around while asking her questions about whose house that is and who lives there. And then they start strong-arming her, manhandling her, hurting her, because they know that loyalist soldiers are in the area, and if you're collaborating, we're gonna kill you. They continue to search the house but find no one. Lita insists again that no one lives there now. Her husband used to, but he died during the bombings. She just wants to lead a simple life, as is written in the ancient texts. So the soldier finally lets her go and leaves. It's terrible.
Quite, yeah. But they do leave without finding any of the people hiding in whatever hidey spot it is.
That is true. So she protected them.
She did. And then we're out in the yard. The loyalist soldiers are in uniforms. Kane is out there. Daniel is out there. And they're just talking about the plan. They're going to use the city's convenient tunnel systems to get them near one of the bunker's access points. So that's a good thing that those things are there.
Right?
Yeah. And then they're going to wait for SG-1 and all of the various other SG teams once they get there before they make their final move into the bunker. Kane says, let's hope your friends keep up the bargain. And of course, we all know that they're going to, because it's the Stargate teams. Even though Kane is right there, Daniel and Lita have a little bit of a moment. And then Daniel leaves. And they smile at each other and nod. Lita watches everyone go.
Next, we're in the city with Daniel and the soldiers and Kane all running through tunnels. We get a lot of back and forth at this point. So preparations are happening at the SGC. The people on the planet continue to advance on the bunker. Before they head through the gate, Sam and Teal'c throw some tear gas through the wormhole. Things progress pretty quickly after that. Soren's aide tells him that already posts are not reporting in and that loyalist troops have entered. Information on this planet moves so fast.
It does, like instantaneous.
Even in the chaos of war.
Yep.
Yep. They already know that they've been infiltrated and that they're taking back some of the sections of their bunker. Soren's like, take them back. This guy's like, we can't. Their attack has been coordinated with the off-worlders and we're losing control. And Soren's like, well, no, we're just going to keep going as planned. We're not evacuating.
The SG teams meet up with Daniel and Kane and the various other soldiers that they had with him and ask if there's any chance that Soren will surrender, which we learned in the last scene is not going to happen. Back down with Soren elsewhere in the bunker, the rebel aide says that they are hopelessly outnumbered, but they only had 12 people on the SG team and it didn't seem that there were all that many people with Kane and Daniel. So how did they manage to take over the entire city with, what, all of like 5 people?
I don't know.
I was very confused about how the numbers worked out on this because they made it sound like Soren had like this huge army and then they're outnumbered so easily that if it was so easy to outnumber them and reclaim the bunker and the city, how did they manage to take over the city in the first place?
Maybe a bunch of loyalists they thought were dead were hiding in the tunnels, and like as Kane and Daniel went through, they like snowballed and just
maybe
became a bigger force.
Yeah, maybe so.
Sure.
Sure, we'll go with that. Yeah, so apparently there's way too many of them. They're so outnumbered, but Soren doesn't want to hear that, so he shoots the person that told him that. Nice guy, Soren.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
Great guy. Yep. Especially great to shoot somebody that is helping you when you have not enough people there to help you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Soren tells everyone that is left now that they're all there for one purpose, and that purpose is to honor their gods and purge all of the non-believers, which they apparently did. So the numbers don't add up. I'm just, I can't get past that.
It's really
just doesn't add up. Yeah.
Nope.
They're going to die, if necessary, in the name of the gods. So he yells at everybody that is around them to engage the people coming in. They were not willing to do that, which also raised so many questions for me. Why was this the dividing line where they're like, no, you know what? We slaughtered so many people for you, but this one battle where there's all of like 15 people coming after us, this is where we draw the line. This is too much.
I think it's we're happy to kill but not die for our beliefs.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly, there seems to be a good number of people like that throughout history. All of these factions meet up. Yeah, Sam and all of the SG teams and Kane and his people and Soren and everybody are now having a face-off. But because Soren's people seem reluctant and are hesitating, Sam pulls her big giant gun on Soren and tells him to drop his weapon. He does not, at least not immediately. He does eventually put his arm out to his side, so he's still holding his gun, but he doesn't have it aimed at anybody, and he's only holding it in one hand, and then Kane shoots him. And he dies.
That was for the best.
Yes, yeah. True. It was for the best. However, as Daniel rightfully points out, he may well have just made a martyr of the guy because it did look like he was about to surrender. And then Kane just shot him with no due process or anything. So Kane says he had no choice, though, and that Daniel can return to his world now. Daniel says that they made a promise. They're going to try to help these people, however many are left of them. It could be 5. It could be 5 million. We have no idea. It's very ambiguous over there.
Yeah, and not even including like whatever the hell happened in Caledonia.
Right? Yeah. So whoever's left after all this, they're going to help them all rebuild and keep their promise. Sam asks Daniel if he's ready to go home, and he says he is. So they walk away with Teal'c. End of episode.
Yeah.
Kathy.
Yes.
Did you like the episode?
I wouldn't say I liked it. I didn't dislike it. And you were right when you said earlier it did pick up in the later parts of it. And that's, I think, mainly because literally something happens instead of people just talking.
Right.
But it was, I don't know, it wasn't that thrilling and the plot was kind of weird.
Yes.
And to be honest, it's kind of surprising that like all out war literally doesn't break out on more planets that they visit because of the Stargate.
Very true.
I mean, because there have been other instances, they've visited planets too where people have disagreements about their faith and beliefs about the Stargate, and they've been to other planets where people seem to be either already warring or on the brink of war. But this one, I don't know. It's really weird how emphatic everyone in this episode was that it wasn't Daniel's fault.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's true. Like, it's not really Daniel's fault. He didn't create the situation that the world was in before the Stargate activated. But everyone went out of their way to tell Daniel it's not his fault. And also they went way out of their way to send him home for no reason. I don't know. It just, Daniel seemed to have an outsized importance to these people.
Yeah.
That I found really weird. So it was okay. I don't know. That was a little bit messy and all over the place. What about you?
Yeah. As I said before, I found it to be really draggy and slow and so talky. And then it did finally pick up, but then it ended so abruptly that it was kind of jarring. I thought it was really strange how very suddenly it ended. And it was just a weird episode. Like I said, the whole thing where they're talking about, like, they have so few people to try to retake the bunker. And it seems that Soren's stronghold is only the bunker. So how are they ruling the entire city if they only have a handful of people and they only have the stronghold of the bunker, and yet somehow they are establishing their new theological regime with just a handful of people and they've killed everybody else? It just didn't make any sense to me. Numbers just didn't seem to add up.
That's
to me.
Reasonable.
And so it just made it such an implausible plot. Two, on top of it being oddly draggy and then finally interesting and then suddenly over. So I didn't hate it. I didn't really like it either.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It was an episode of Stargate SG-1.
It was that. Yes.
So what's next? Not an episode of Stargate SG-1, I believe.
Indeed not. I am glad to be going back to Atlantis. Stargate Atlantis, Season 1, Episode 5, Suspicion. According to the TVDB, after a series of run-ins with the Wraith, the team begins to suspect their Asthosian allies of having a spy in their midst. Or, according to IMDb, there's suspicion of a Wraith collaborator, and some of the team suspect the Athosians. Ford and Shepard find land on Atlantis planet. Atlantis's planet. Atlantis with an apostrophe.
Okay.
Possessive Atlantis.
That's such a random like thing to throw in there.
Yes. I've actually watched about the first half of this one also, because again, I was on the treadmill and bored. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not all sunshine and rainbows and trust amongst the folks over at Atlantis.
Apparently not.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much for listening to Stargazing with Kathy and Mary. This podcast is completely listener-supported, and we couldn't do it without you. Show your support by telling everyone you know about how awesome this show is. Your reviews help a lot, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at stargazing.space, reach out to us via email at stargazing@gmail.com, find us on social media at Stargazing on Instagram, Stargazing at Mastodon.world, get some merch at tinyurl.com/stargazing, and finally show your financial support by joining us over at patreon.com/stargazing. Thank you for traveling through the gate with us. We'll catch you next time on Stargazing with Kathy and Mary.
I'm Kathy.
I'm Mary.
And you have been listening to Stargazing. The end.
The end.